Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast, your source for policy rants and raves from Tech Freedom, your Washington, D.C. advocate for the freedom to tinker and innovate. I'm Evan Schwartzschreiber, your host. On today's show, sex trafficking on the internet or lack thereof. Backpage.com is an online advertising website similar to Craigslist. It's number two after Craigslist in that type of classified advertising online. And the website's embroiled in some controversy over allegations that the website helps facilitate sex trafficking and prostitution. Joining me to discuss this is legal associate at the Cato Institute, Randall Meyer. Randall, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Evan.
So, Randall, yesterday the Senate voted 96-0, a unanimous vote, to hold Backpage.com in contempt for not answering Senate subpoenas and not cooperating with a month-long Senate investigation into sex trafficking. And this certainly isn't the first time that the website has come under fire from authorities. And you previously worked on a case where the sheriff of Cook County, Illinois, Sheriff Joe Dart, he had some beef with Backpage. So tell us about that case.
Yes. So in that case, Sheriff Joe Dart essentially used his letterhead, his office, his title to send threatening letters to Visa, MasterCard, and other financial backers of Backpage.com. The letters essentially threatened prosecution and investigation if the websites did not desist doing business with Backpage and if they did not contact Sheriff Dart immediately to try to facilitate his investigation. Now, the First Amendment protects against officers of the court or officers of law from using their office informally to threaten prosecutions to achieve policy ends. This has been a principle dating back to at least the 1960s in American law, and it's a very clearly established one.
So it's not appropriate for, you know, the sheriff of Chicago, sort of Cook County, to be just trying to screw with Backpage's business, basically, by sending threatening letters, even though they have no legal basis, correct?
Exactly. Not only is it that, but it's also unconstitutional.
So really, the controversy started because of these allegations from groups like the National Center on Sexual Exploitation and critics of Backpage, who say that it's not doing enough to remove listings that are clearly aimed at sex trafficking or listings that involve prostitution. It's, you know, as far as I know, it's perfectly fine to use Backpage to just find sexual partners if no money's changing hands, but obviously to use it for prostitution would be wrong. So let's get into this and see what the facts say. I mean, is Backpage.com or websites like Craigslist, its competitor, are they really enabling sex trafficking? Has the internet made sex trafficking easier?
There's no evidence to state that, and this is one of the main points that Cato stressed in our brief before the Federal Appeals Court. Between 2000 and 2005, there were about 50,000 trafficking victims in the U.S. After 2005, that number went down to 14,000 to 17,000 victims, and since then, there's been no update to the numbers or changes. So simply stated, there is no evidence whatsoever that the internet has increased sex trafficking. At least there's no empirical evidence to date. And to the claim that Backpage is facilitating sex trafficking in some way, it just makes no sense considering their practices. Backpage requires the use of a credit card in many circumstances and adult services to have the record available to provide to police officers. They respond to requests for any information on advertisements that are suspected to be a child or suspected to be a trafficking victim, usually within 24 hours without even the requirement of a subpoena. And in fact, in 2008, when this issue was going on with Craigslist and Backpage, the National Association of Attorneys General required the use of a credit card, the exact mechanism now that Sheriff Dart seeks to cull out of the market of Backpage's financial backers.
So Backpage requires credit card transactions as a way of making it safer, because credit card transactions leave a paper trail if something were to happen, like prostitution or allegations of sexual misconduct or abuse. You could then theoretically use those credit card transactions as a way of tracking them down. And I guess the irony is that the sheriff, in an effort to try to defund the site or to really screw with their business model, is trying to shut down arguably one of the things that makes it safer, which is the credit card transactions.
Exactly. These credit card transactions are incredibly useful at the initial stages of police investigation. It gives you a company. It gives you some sort of identifiable person usually to work with. And in fact, hundreds of trafficking victims are caught with Backpage's cooperation a month. Many other law enforcement officers throughout the country have complimented Backpage and even sung its praises for helping them actually resolve trafficking instances. There's an estimate from one of the experts in sex trafficking that if Backpage.com was shut down, we would catch 400 less trafficking victims a month than we would nowadays.
So even the website that is embroiled in controversy and constantly being accused of enabling sex trafficking, they are taking good faith efforts to help law enforcement. But what are we talking in terms of numbers here? What percentage? So, you know, Backpage, obviously, sexual listings or adult listings are one part of its site, but it's also just like Craigslist. You can buy furniture, you can buy a cell phone, you can buy pretty much anything. What percentage are we talking when it comes to adult listings on the site? And then what percentage of those could even be seen as involving illegal sex work?
Well, thank God that TechCrunch actually did the data on this exact question. So there's about 9 million live ads on the site on any given day, and only 11% or so, or under a million ads, are listed in the adult services category. Now, of those ads, the 11 million or the 1 million or the 11% that are adult services, only 1.6% of that is removed from the site in a given month because it's assumed to be trafficking or some kind of victim of that. Or only 2% of that 1.6%. The other 98% of that 1.6% is still just something that doesn't comply with the regulations or of the actual site itself. So we're talking about 2% of 1.6% of 11%.
All right, that's a lot of percentages. You sound like Bernie Sanders.
Well, the senator from Vermont definitely has a rhythm with them.
Yeah. So really, I mean, what? So the site removes things that aren't necessarily prostitution related. Why would the site remove? So you say it's only 2% of 1.6%. What is the other 98%? Why are they removing all these other ads? Is it just a preemptive measure? Is it an abundance of caution?
Yes, they go through preemptive measures. They police the site themselves. And in many cases, you can see in many of these cases, they just don't comply with the site's own rules governing what can be posted, what can't be posted. Unfortunately, they don't really get into the exact breakdown of what is what and where is where. But we do know that it's a very minuscule amount that is ever removed for sex trafficking.
And Backpage has argued that they have numerous court decisions really upholding their business model as legitimate. And what ended up happening in the Backpage versus Dart, Sheriff Dart case, where your organization, the Cato Institute, filed a legal brief?
Well, this isn't even the first time that Dart and Backpage have been in court together. There was also, instead of just Backpage versus Dart, there was Dart versus Backpage a few years ago in the same exact district court, where the district court said, you can't just assume all these ads are sex trafficking, therefore you cannot just issue some sort of giant prior restraint on the entire website and shut it down. And now we're faced with the exact same case, essentially, filed in Illinois, where instead of using formal mechanisms to shut down the site, he is using informal mechanisms.
Ah, so in the past, he tried to get them to shut down by saying that because, you know, he alleged that they were involved in sex trafficking, and because of that, he just filed kind of like a restraining order against them to get them exercising their First Amendment right to have content. And then the second time around, it was more of an informal method. He went to the customers of Backpage, being the credit card companies, because if you and I want to post an ad, that's free. We're not generally probably paying for that. If I post an ad to sell furniture on Craigslist, that's free. But he's going to the credit card companies, which process transactions, and trying to shut them down that way. So he's tried the formal methods, he's tried the informal methods, and you say both times he lost in court.
Yes. Well, unfortunately, he did win at the trial level in this initial case, but the appeals court strongly admonished his position, to say the least, when the matter came up on appeal, and the court granted a preliminary injunction to stop him from doing what he was doing to attack Backpage's business. And it's very rare for a court to issue a preliminary injunction because it's very hard to obtain them. It's a high legal standard. So Dart was very, very wrong in this case.
Well, I guess, he's been admonished several times. And it wasn't just so listeners know, this wasn't just some, you know, Sheriff Joe Dart sitting at a table one day and goes, you know, I'm going to write a letter to Visa and just, you know, screw it. It's a benign act and we'll see if I get what I want. He, like, lawyers for Backpage say he hired an entire staff. He hired 10 people. He threatened the credit card companies. He set up really a campaign to go after Backpage. So this begs the question, what is motivating this? I mean, is there a big outcry over sex trafficking in Chicago and he's using Backpage as a scapegoat? I mean, Randall, what do you think is motivating the sheriff?
I think the sheriff has a particular has a moralistic crusade, essentially, against Backpage and against sex trafficking and prostitution in general. And there's, to a certain degree, also, there's a issue with this program, the War on Prostitution, that's starting to mirror the War on Drugs. On the first level, the government is attempting to wipe out the distinction between trafficking victims and prostitution victims. Prostitution victims arguably aren't even victims because they voluntarily engage in the trade, whereas a trafficking victim is someone who's not voluntarily engaging in the trade.
Yeah, there's a clear distinction there. It's important. I mean, and of course, you know, even prostitutes who do sex work voluntarily, that doesn't mean there aren't opportunities where they are abused and things like that. And of course, if they're not, they might not be, they might do it of their own choice, but maybe because they don't have a lot of choices. So it's important to look at those things too. But really, there's a huge difference between, excuse me, going after someone who is voluntarily engaging in prostitution as a way of making money. And of course, it's illegal, but that's clearly different than a sex trafficked person who is basically in sex slavery. Like, that's a much more serious issue, arguably. And why do you think the government is trying to erase that distinction?
There's been a coalition that's built over the last 20 years of ultra-feminists and religious groups. This has been well documented in the sociological literature surrounding sex trafficking. And these groups are pushing to wipe out the distinction because their goal is to wipe out all prostitution because they believe it's immoral. And it helps their cause politically in order to make all prostitutes appear to be victims. The image of a child transported in from, say, China or from Thailand, who is then forced into the trade, is really generally not the case when it comes to prostitution, but that's the image they're trying to create. They're trying to wipe out any distinction between prostitution and trafficking.
Is it because, excuse me, so the vast majority of prostitutes are not victims of sex trafficking, but it helps their political cause to kind of blur that line so that there are, so it undercuts the argument that prostitution maybe should be legalized. I mean, you,
exactly.
You alluded to the war on drugs. I mean, we've spent, since Richard Nixon, we've spent decades and trillions of dollars trying to stop the flow of drugs, and we have a heroin epidemic that gets talked about in the presidential campaign. It doesn't seem to have worked. And I guess you could make a similar claim about prostitution, that law enforcement's efforts to do this just haven't worked. And maybe we should be looking to countries like the Netherlands or states like Nevada and see how they regulate it and do it legally and minimize the transmission of sexually transmitted diseases. Maybe things like the Backpage controversy should really, we shouldn't be looking at how to shut down this website, but maybe we should be thinking about the fact that A, it helps find sex traffickers because it's a tool, it's a resource. If people are using it for illegal things, the website's happy to help law enforcement. And also, maybe we shouldn't be fighting this war on prostitution. Maybe it's not working.
It's definitely not working, because even if we look at the numbers, or any empirical evidence that has existed on this says that the numbers have generally been consistent since 2005 after a large drop. And if we look at the number of federal laws passed between 2000 and 2015, there were six major statutes passed that were supposed to stop human trafficking and provide law enforcement all the tools they need, give the State Department all the tools they need, and still, there's no empirical evidence that sex trafficking has altered. Yet the Trafficking Victims Protection Act of 2000 provides a grant program to law enforcement to conduct raids that are stopping human trafficking, similar to how grants are provided to SWAT teams to go after marijuana or to go after drugs. So a lot of these raids, though, actually do end up being just prostitution raids with no distinction at all between trafficking and prostitution. So essentially, this anti-trafficking effort has turned into legislation that now has become an anti-prostitution effort and is providing federal funding to agencies to the tune of $11 million a year in order to stop prostitution, which is not the aim of the act. This money is being allocated towards voluntary prostitution, not the actual victims who need assistance.
Well, there's certainly an important policy issue at play as well, because, of course, Backpage, millions of ads every month are being screened. It's impossible for any website to make sure that nothing illegal comes across it ever. Like, it's just impossible. There's always going to be instances. And even websites like Google and Facebook and YouTube, sometimes content that violates copyrights is up for a few hours and they take it down. And they try really hard to do it as fast as they can, and they allow people to flag content, but you're never always going to catch everything. And I guess one of the big policy questions here is, who is liable when a website hosts illegal content? Now, lawyers for Backpage argue that everything they do is in accordance with the Communications Decency Act. So, Randall, can you get into that a little bit and what the policy is here that is at play?
Sure. So Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act is basically a safe harbor provision for online content providers. The Act says specifically no provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as a publisher or the speaker of information provided by another information content provider. So what the website produces as its own content, it is responsible for. But if the website is, say, like Backpage, where people write their own ads, post their own ads, choose what words to use, and choose the content, then they're covered under the safe harbor provision. And this is very important for commercial transactions, because there's no way websites like even Facebook, Twitter, or Amazon could operate effectively if anyone who puts anything on their website could then result in liability for the main website itself.
Yeah, you could argue that Section 230 showed some remarkable foresight from the lawmakers who wrote it, because, correct me if I'm wrong, it was part of the 1996 Telecommunications Act.
Yes.
I mean, and really the internet was in its baby stage then, at least the commercial internet that we know of today. That was before Web 2.0, things like user-generated content, YouTube, Facebook. I mean, really the only user-generated content we saw in 96 was like GeoCities and these tiny little web pages that people did for fun. But you could argue that that law allowed companies like Facebook, Google, Backpage, and Craigslist to succeed, because if they were constantly in court fighting legal battles, they wouldn't have maybe had the resources to innovate. And that's something you argued in your brief about Backpage, is that the irony is that people like Sheriff Joe Dart and others in the Senate, and what they're doing by going after Backpage is constraining their resources, forcing Backpage to spend money on lawyers, and that's arguably money that they could spend policing their site better and being more cooperative with law enforcement. But instead, in trying to defund the site, you might actually be hampering their efforts to combat sex trafficking.
They are, and we can recite an exact number on this. Experts say it'll cost 400 trafficking victims a month. That's over 48, that's nearly 5,000 victims a year who won't be caught if we shut down Backpage.com. And it's because of Backpage's efforts in these areas. Not to mention, think of how much time Sheriff Dart is spending trying to shut down Backpage versus actually chasing down trafficking victims in the city of Chicago. It's a remarkable amount of time. He's devoted significant resources, as you were talking about, to having an entire office to carry out this campaign.
Yeah, that's 10 staff. That's 10 people who could be doing something else, or that's 10 salaries worth of taxpayer money that goes back to the taxpayers. I mean, there's always an opportunity cost when you spend government resources, and there's also an opportunity cost for Backpage when they have to spend their own resources on lawyers. I mean, and looking ahead, so we've got 96-0 holding them in contempt. Obviously, most people comply with government subpoenas, so Backpage is making a statement here. It's probably not that they're really that turned off by the idea of sending someone to a committee to testify. I think they want the media coverage. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that they're trying to make a point that the First Amendment and the CDA protect exactly what they're doing, so they shouldn't have to turn over everything. They shouldn't have to be treated as if they're some sort of sex trafficking agency, because they're not. That even if you assumed every ad on Backpage was for sex trafficking, it only accounts for 11% of their business, and that's an assumption you legally cannot make, nor could even the facts of the ads justify. I had the distinct displeasure of looking through a lot of Backpage ads in the adult services category when we were investigating this brief.
So you were doing quote-unquote research?
Yes. No, but in doing that research, there's a lot of coded language, there's a lot of things that go on in there, so when you get a feel for this, you start to understand you cannot just assume that all of this is trafficking. There's plenty of dominatrixes on there who provide a perfectly legal service, whatever its social merits.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, you're getting into a moral question at that point, and then you have to start questioning some of the motives of the people who are trying to shut down Backpage. Is it to stop sex trafficking, because the data doesn't seem to support that effort, or is it a moral outrage that people are using the internet to do weird stuff with each other?
I think it's the latter. It's the moral outrage that the internet is making people do weird stuff with each other. I think a good number of people are just uncomfortable with somewhat more of the openness that has happened in society with preferences and services, and now there's this moralistic backlash that's coming around that's trying to wipe out any form of prostitution or anything or any sort of deviancy or deviant services that could possibly be provided.
Well, yeah, looking ahead, Backpage welcomes the vote of contempt, because they want the court battle battle. I guess they think that either it will help them publicly be vindicated, or it will just, because if the facts come to light and the facts support them, that's great. Or it might just question the validity of committees issuing subpoenas if they can't really prove that the site has any relevance to the investigation. So we'll be tracking that. But that's it for today's show. My guest has been Randall Meyer, a legal associate at the Cato Institute, a libertarian think tank. Randall, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Evan. It's a pleasure.
Follow us on Twitter at TechFreedom or on Facebook.com/TechFreedom. Find this podcast in the iTunes store or on your favorite podcast app. If you like what you hear or if you don't, please leave us a review. It will help us and it will help others find the show. Thank you for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.